Potatoes are really good. I'd hoped that Godot and I would start gobbling potatoes right away, but Cray-Ray wouldn't let us. He needed the timing to be perfect. He told us that days 3 and 4 of the potato famine can be really tough, that we might feel like shit. He said we couldn't really work during that time or have any important engagements. He said most people start on a Thursday, so those bad potato days fall on the weekend and don't fuck up their work. Well, I work all the time, so there's no way to schedule the potato famine around time off. But I could schedule it around the nights Penn and Teller don't have shows in Vegas. Thursday and Friday are our dark days. Wait just a fucking minute. You're in showbiz and you take Friday off? But Friday isn't magic in Vegas. Saturday is. We sell out Saturdays, but Friday is when most people arrive in Vegas, and the thinking is that they'll have supper and throw a fuck in their date or something, but probably won't see a show. Fridays are special in other cities where people are home and don't have to travel, so they go out to shows on Friday. But since we're dark in Vegas on Fridays, we can do one-nighters in other cities on those dark days, so even our days off are chosen with greed in mind. Thursday and Friday, December 11 and 12, 2014, were rarities for P&T. We didn't have shows in Vegas. We didn't have shows on the road. On top of that, my whole family was away visiting Grandpa that week. I had writing to do. I always have writing to do. And some meetings. But no really difficult work and no social obligations. I could stay home and starve and hate potatoes. Godot would do the time with me. We decided that Godot and Penn would eat nothing but potatoes for 2 weeks starting at 12:01 a.m. on Tuesday, December 9th. Cray-Ray gave us a lot of other rules. We were supposed to sleep a lot. We had to allow ourselves to be cold, and we were not to exercise. Yep, we were going to lose weight by sleeping, not exercising, and eating all the potatoes we wanted. No doubt, we had joined a crazy cult. According to Cray-Ray, humans, or at least Americans, have eliminated winter. We have conquered the three realms that control all other undomesticated animals' lives. Light, heat, and food. We are bright, warm, and fed all year round. There aren't really seasons for us anymore, but Cray-Ray believes seasons matter. We spend bright, warm, fed time preparing for a winter that never comes. Cray-Ray wanted Penn and Godot to experience 90 days of winter so we could use some of the fat we'd saved up. He wanted us cold, hungry, healthy, and happy. I didn't understand much of this at the time, and I still don't understand a lot of it, but Cray-Ray's 2-week potato famine was designed to knock our asses out of the American relationship with food. Cray-Ray said most diets fail because people can do anything for 90 days, but then they crack. People can change how they eat for a season, but that's about it. So if you diet like a grown-up and lose 2 pounds a week by eating sensibly, you lose about 25 pounds. You can see and feel 25 pounds, but it doesn't blow your mind. Losing 25 pounds is not life-changing if you need to lose over 30. And if you don't need to lose over 30, you probably don't need such a radical diet. So you can slowly and sensibly lose 25 pounds over 12 weeks and then say, fuck it, and slowly put it back on. Cray-Ray's idea was to have us lose weight so fast we would feel it every day. He promised us 6/10 to 8/10 of a pound a day, which is 4 to 5.5 pounds a week. After 12 weeks, we'd be down 60 pounds, and we really would be able to see and feel that. At that point, our diet would change to whole plants, including nuts and fruit. The new diet would feel like a feast. It would restrict us so much that after we'd gotten used to eating no animal products, salt, oil, or refined grains, it would seem like Thanksgiving to have an orange. 2 weeks of nothing but potatoes also eliminates eating both as a social activity and as entertainment. Eating just potatoes means you eat only when you feel like you really need to eat. There's no entertainment in a potato. And it's not social. You don't sit around with friends at a plain potato bar. It also eliminates what Cray-Ray loosely calls addiction. 2 weeks of potatoes would enable us to taste smaller amounts of salt and fat than we ever could in our standard American diet, called for all sorts of reasons, sad. We would see our culture from the outside a little bit. We would see billboards dripping cheese and people eating big muffins in business meetings. We would see everyone else eating constantly. We'd be knocked out of our heads. 2 weeks of nothing but potatoes would reboot my eating. I was going to leave all my old food habits behind. All the stuff I knew about myself and food would change. I was so ready for this. The rules were simple. For 2 full weeks, I would eat nothing but potatoes. Just potatoes. Nothing added. And nothing taken away, skin and all. Sweet potatoes are potatoes. Wow. Fingerling, Idaho, russet, red, new, any kind of potato I wanted. I could microwave them or bake them or boil them or eat them raw. As many as I wanted, anytime I wanted. But just potatoes. I could put some pepper on them, but no salt, no Tabasco, nothing. I could eat potatoes for 2 weeks, no ketchup, no vinegar, just potatoes. I would be an old-fashioned meat and potatoes guy without the meat. Day one, 304.3 pounds. I weighed myself on my fancy withing scale, 304.3 pounds. Cray Ray insists on the withings. Every morning, right before my shower, I step on the scale. It weighs me, takes my pulse, measures my fat content, monitors the air quality, and tells me if it's going to rain. You think that's a joke, right? You think I added, tells me if it's going to rain, as a joke, like it's a floor wax and a dessert topping. But I'm not kidding. It measures all that, and it stores the information on the internet and graphs it and sends it to my phone and to Cray Ray's phone. Our leader would know every time I stepped on the scale. Thank you, Withings. And that last sentence wasn't a joke either. I get home from the show that Monday night to find that Easy had boiled potatoes for me. Up until this point, I've been trying to eat kind of healthy. So after the show at the theater, have a big plate of broiled salmon, some broccoli, and some spinach. I thought broiled salmon was kind of safe, healthy, but Cray Ray said it's just fat. Think of it as just a slab of fat. You don't need another animal's fat. You can use your own. So that Monday night, I canceled my room service order and drove home and had a potato. I couldn't remember the last time I'd eaten a plain potato. Maybe never. I took a bite. Without the butter and salt, I could kind of taste the potato. It had a nice, dirty taste and smell, and I found comfort in it. I would soon come to know everything about the taste of potatoes, but this was the first one. With a nice potato on board, I watched Black Mirror with my wife, and then a sweet potato before taking my bath. To give you an idea of what a change this was, most nights, after having my salmon and watching a little TV, my before-bath snack was some really sharp cheddar cheese dipped in peanut butter, accompanied by a couple of saltines. See? This was a big diet change. I read in the bathtub. I told you I would write about my experience of weight loss. I was reading Norman Mailer's The Executioner's Song and loving it. An amazing book. And even better when read in a hot tub of water very early on a beautiful desert morning. I woke up feeling great. I often felt sluggish in the morning, but maybe having less salt and fat on board helped. I don't know. Or maybe it was all psychosomatic. But I stepped on the scale and I'd lost 1.8 pounds. And I'd eaten normally for most of that day. Call it water weight, call it whatever you want, but I was 1.8 pounds lighter. Getting that immediate reinforcement really meant something. I got up and did not exercise. I microwaved a couple of potatoes, both sweet and regular, wrapped them in tinfoil, threw them in my car, head over to meet Godot for coffee. We were allowed all the coffee we wanted, black, with no sugar, but all we wanted. I've been off caffeine for decades, so I was just drinking dirty water. I went to the P&T rehearsal at the theater and worked with Piff the Magic Dragon, Johnny Thompson, our great crew, and Teller. I felt great and really energetic, and we got a lot done. I came home and had supper with my family. Roast chicken for them, potatoes for me. But the children joined in with me. They like to eat what Daddy eats. I had a couple of potatoes, but wasn't sated. So when I got to the theater, I had another potato. And then the show started. Now, one of the most important parts of this Cray Ray diet is no exercise. But I was still doing the full P&T show. It's not a lot of exercise, but it's more than you think. I move a lot on stage and talk really loudly for a long time. I also concentrate. Even after doing P&T shows for 40 years, I can't coast. I really can't. I can do part of the show on autopilot, and my autopilot works great. Some of the best moments in our show have happened while I was thinking about other stuff. But I can't do the whole show on autopilot. It takes a lot of thinking. We do things in our show that are dependent on audience members. We perform some proudly fake mind reading, but even though it's fake, it's different every night. About halfway through the show, I began to feel like shit. I started flop sweating and felt like I was going to throw up. I was lightheaded and distracted, right on the edge of fainting. This wasn't good. I had friends in the audience. Later, they said the show looked great. I don't think Teller knew, but I was missing my 1.8 pounds, and I was missing eating food that wasn't potatoes. I was just coming up on 24 hours of the potato famine. This might be a long 2 weeks. I hadn't really told Cray Ray how sick I was at the start. Even though I'd been in the hospital, I don't think I even realized how sick I was. We still understand everything that was going on, but the very drugs that kept me alive as a sick person were poisoning the healthier person I was becoming. I was losing weight so quickly that I was a different patient from week to week. My doctor was rushing to keep up with my health and to take me off the meds at the right time. This is why I needed my doctor on board every step of the way. Our show was followed by movie night. Movie night started in NYC. We were playing off-Broadway. A bunch of us would meet after the show at Howard Johnson's in Times Square, have a snack, and then go to a movie. There were two rules for choosing what to see. The start time had to be close to midnight, and the movie had to be the most likely to go away quickly. When Rolling Stone wrote about movie night, they thought we were just trying to see bad movies. No, they're just a lot of bad movies. We'd give a round of polite golf applause whenever the name of the film was spoken in the movie, and we'd sometimes say, wow, when the title of another movie was spoken in the movie, as in, help Dad do the right thing. Wow, wow, wow. When movie night moved to Vegas, it got weirder. It moved from public theaters to my house and changed from movie night to bacon movie night. To choose the movie, we used the theory behind 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. That night's movie had to be connected to the last one we'd watched through an actor. Bacon became as important as the movie, maybe more so. One movie night during the potato famine, a few people decided to create a movie nighter ritual. The movie night nurse decided she would have her naked ass spanked with bacon. Who am I to blow against the wind? Some movie nighters shot video of the heathen baptism and took turns whacking her with the bacon. Then they fried it up. I could have eaten baptism ass bacon. There are also bacon-wrapped dates with gorgonzola, a big pepperoni pizza, guacamole, homemade brownies, and popcorn, both cheese-flavored and buttered. I love all those foods. I ate a potato. When my friends asked, what's with the potato, I answered just like I should. This potato means fuck you. That's a perfectly acceptable movie night answer, and all my friends understood. Ray's instruction was to not talk to anyone about this. Everyone has theories on diet, and they will try to help. I'm fully aware the big parts of this plan might be bullshit, but I joined the cult. It's pretty funny. If you decide to take a quick ride on a motorcycle or eat nothing but candy for a week, your friends aren't going to say anything. But try eating a little different, and everyone will be on your dick. Is eating only potatoes crazy? Yes. Is it life-threatening? No. Should anyone care? Especially the fat fucks all around you stuffing their faces with candy and french fries? Fuck them. Shut up. I'll cut to the chase. The potato means fuck you, and we're done. Day 2, 302.5. The show was really hard. I mean really hard. I was flop sweating and felt lightheaded and faint. The audience didn't know, but man, I knew. I don't want to gloss over this. I love all the changes I made to my health and my diet, but an important part of Cray Ray's program is no exercise. And I was still doing the show through the whole thing. I'm not doing a Cirque du So What act. I'm not an acrobat, and I'm not crowd surfing or running around at random like Springsteen. I'm mostly just talking, but I'm talking loudly, and that seems to take some energy. I'm also keeping a lot in my head, at least for me. The P&T script is around 100 pages of dialogue, and it's all me. And there's a lot of the show that changes every night, audience members' names and so on, and parts of the show are flow-charted, so there are different lines and actions depending on what happens. It takes a lot of focus. The other thing that seems to make a difference is that comedy is timing. So I have to judge my timing based on the audience, the magic, and teller. I can't do it based on how I feel. So if I were to get just a tiny bit lightheaded out in the world, I would just take a breath or even sit down for 5 seconds. Any other time in my life, I could do that, but not during the show. There's no place during any line in the show where I can take an extra breath without hurting the performance. And it's only during Teller's stupid red ball and silverfish tricks that I can even sit down for a few seconds. Let me be clear on this. I am not saying that I work hard. I don't. Not at all. I'm in showbiz. But I do get lightheaded when I'm eating only potatoes. This feeling kept up for the whole 90 days, even occasionally after. Cray-Ray and I tried all sorts of things to keep me from getting lightheaded. We added a metric shit ton of rice once I was finished eating only potatoes. I even bought some of those diabetic glucose pills and ate them while Teller was out doing his fancy red ball trick. I would sit down and eat sugar and hope that I wouldn't get lightheaded, but I still did. We never really solved this problem, but the upside was worth a little lightheadedness. Day 3, 296.2. Look at those numbers. On the second day alone, I lost almost 5 pounds. And by day 3, I'd lost over 8 pounds total. If you stop eating salt, you do lose a lot of water weight. It wasn't all fat. Maybe not even mostly fat. but it was still weight I wasn't carrying around with me. Gray Ray had warned me that days 3 and 4 were the hardest, and my potato schedule was built around those. They were Thursdays and Fridays. I had those days off. It wasn't terrible. I was just quiet and sleepy. They were gentle days. Not days of suffering, but days of sitting quietly and taking naps. It was kind of like being sick without the being sick part. I liked it. I liked days 3 and 4. They were gentle, quiet, time out. Day 6, 290. At this point, I was averaging more than 2 pounds a day. By now, I've watched a lot of friends go through the potato famine. It's pretty remarkable. With the exception of Teresa Godot, everyone has found it easier than expected. But my buddy Teresa had a really hard time. She got sick and couldn't keep the potatoes down. That's why I keep making it clear that I'm writing only about my experience. I didn't run a scientific experiment. I didn't set up controls and other stuff I don't really understand. I'm just a dipshit potato eater who lost a lot of weight. One of the things the potato famine did was pull me out of the food culture. I've never drunk alcohol or done drugs, so when I walk into a bar or a rave, which I don't do often, I see it through sober eyes. I have a buddy who was high all the time. He made a documentary about drugs for TV and had to produce and direct, so he had to work sober in a lot of places he had once been high and partying. It blew his mind. He didn't think he could drink and do drugs ever again. I think he managed to get over that. But when you're losing weight and eating potatoes and nothing else, the food culture seems so batshit crazy. I would go to Hollywood meetings at 11 o'clock in the morning, and there would be food in the conference room. Who at that meeting was honestly going to be hungry? And of those people who were hungry, who couldn't wait through the meeting for lunch at noon? Muffins are everywhere. The ads for food that wallpaper our world and flood our senses are invisible until you're eating just potatoes. Cray Ray points out that our lives are one big meal interrupted by a little work, occasional fucking, and watching TV. Cray Ray has the real info, but I was losing weight on potatoes at the same rate I would have lost weight on a water fast. Eating potatoes was pretty much the same as not eating at all. But I think eating potatoes blew my mind more than not eating at all. It took all the entertainment out of eating. It took all the habit out of eating. No one just hands you a potato like they would a donut or a muffin. They aren't available in every single store. You have to think about getting potatoes. I also learned that hot potato is a very good image. A baked potato fresh out of the microwave or oven is so fucking hot. I'm a fire eater, and I'm used to burning my mouth, but potatoes are so much more dangerous than torches. Potatoes taught me about our culture of food, and they taught me about patience. Eating only potatoes taught me to wait before sticking that soft soldering iron in my mouth. I also learned that having a hot potato in your pocket is really fun. The perfect hand warmer. As I write this, I want to go back to potato time. Life is simple when you're just eating potatoes. During my potato time, I would get automated emails from Cray Ray, mostly cheerleadery stuff, some science stuff, and a lot of cult stuff. A lot of stuff designed to suck me into his world. It was around day 6 that Cray Ray had me start my contrast showers. You've been thinking that eating only potatoes isn't a very exciting cult, right? Well, this is when it gets exciting. Cray Ray is not the potato guru. Cray Ray is the cold guru. Most of Cray Ray's experiments deal with cold. He is obsessed with the idea that we've conquered winter, and that's a bad thing. We've conquered cold, dark, and hunger. We're always in summer. Everything is warm, bright, and bountiful. We live in paradise, but our bodies don't know that. Our bodies don't know summer is going to go on forever, so they keep saving up for winter that never comes. Cray Ray wants winter to come. So for me, the summer of Big Macs and donuts had given way to potato winter. It's pretty close to what our ancestors would have had to eat in the winter, stored starches. Cray Ray wanted me to be cold, really cold. Not insane cold like sitting in snow and taking ice bath, but really cold for me. So I got a timer app for my phone and put it in a plastic bag so I could take it in the shower. Using the timer app, I'd allow myself 10 seconds of warm shower, and when it beeped, I'd spin the control to as cold as I could go for 20 seconds. When it beeped again, I'd go back to warm for 10 seconds. I did that 10 times. So I spent 5 minutes going from hot to cold back and forth, always longer in the cold than in the hot. I was in winter. It shocks the body. After the last hot, I'd go on cold for as long as I could stand. There are some magic tricks that are accomplished by memorizing things in order. You need to be able to manipulate these, let's say 52 things, in your head to make the trick work. It takes a lot of practice. So I'd run the most difficult mental exercise of these 52 things of four suits during that last blast of cold and have to get it all correct before I could turn the cold water off. Motherfucker! Cray Ray said the contrast showers would help me burn fat and change my mood. He said I would be invigorated. He said I would be happier. He said I would feel great. The asshole was right. This was just crazy. I was hungry, cold, healthy, and happy. Wow. Day 7, 291.1. I went up. Cray Ray said, no big deal. I say, fuck him. Day 11, 286.6. I'm jumping from day 7 to day 11 because I want this to all be fair and accurate. I had to go to L.A. to do some business, and the fancy hotel I stayed at had a scale in the room, but I don't trust anything but my withings scale. I wanted my tattletale withings that runs to Cray Ray and tells him everything about me every time I step on it. That's what I want. So although I jumped on a scale in L.A., and things looked like they were kind of sort of on track, it's not good for this book. I want withings or nothing. So that data isn't in here. It was my first trip away from home and potatoes. It was really wonderful to go to the airport and not eat. I fly a lot, and airports and planes were always about eating shitty food and feeling terrible. I'd walk past Cinnabon to get a big fat muffin at Bucky's. I didn't have a Whopper with cheese and extra mayonnaise, but I'd grab some salty, spicy peanuts from the nut store. It's a nut and a legume. It's a pea nut. And on top of that, I'd eat shitty plane food. Of course, the Southwest Airlines jump to L.A. doesn't serve anything but peanuts and pretzels, but I sure used to eat them all. I found that flying on this diet is the best. Eating on a plane is supposed to be a distraction. It's an activity. It doesn't matter that the food is shitty. It's something to do. Except it does matter. And there are better distractions that really aren't distractions, but life. There are things I can do on a plane that I really want to do. Maybe you had to eat shit sitting in a cramped area as a distraction before you had a smartphone, but now there's no reason. I read the news or a novel or listen to Bob Dylan over and over. If it's a long trip and I have some room, I can work on my writing. Without food, flying is just an excuse to read and write and have time to myself. This diet I was on was amazing. All the stuff that I thought would be the hardest was the easiest. All the bugs were actually features. Not eating in airports and on planes is the greatest. I love it. A word about pepper. It was allowed, but not until the second week. And even then, I couldn't go nuts. Cray Ray didn't want it at all that first week. Just taste the potato. And no Tabasco. That is too much flavor and just a little salt, but that's too much. Now when I go back to my potato buddies, I always have Tabasco. But in the early days of the potato famine, there was no reason for it. Just train yourself to notice the real taste. Don't blow your taste buds out. So I had a little black pepper, a bag of potatoes of all kinds, and a rock and roll microwave. It might be the same microwave that Steven Tyler uses for his potatoes when he stays at that hotel. That night I had a date with my wife to see Tim Minchin. Tim wrote the music and lyrics to the Roald Dahl show, Matilda the Musical. He won every award in the world for that and made all the money in the world. I think he's even better on his own as a performer, comedian, singer, and piano player. He's a hardcore skeptic and atheist, and his show isn't shy about that. Teller and I saw him with a full orchestra at the O2 Arena in London, and he's wonderful. He's a good guy, too. I love Tim Minchin, and my wife seems to love me. She seems to love me a lot, but not compared to how much she loves Tim Minchin. The love my wife has for Tim is something that has to be experienced to be believed. From his Alice Cooper eyes to his black crow's bare feet, she loves every inch of this man. I love him too, but there is no greater love than the love my wife has for Tim. It's the love Coltrane was carrying on about. Really something. Tim was appearing at a show for the charity that Ryan Bell, the preacher who gave up God for a year, founded. I don't mean to ruin the surprise for you, but after that year, Ryan never went back. He works for a charity that helps the homeless, and this was a mostly atheist charity event where Tim was playing and Ryan was present. Also, there was another one of my favorite comedy acts, Garfunkel and Oates. These two women are so funny and so charming. They weren't performing, they were in the audience, and my heart was pounding when I met them. I love them. Let Easy have Tim, and I'll take Garfunkel and Oates. If you can broker that deal, let me know. So the little after-show party was filled with people I knew and wanted to know. I was hobnobbing with my fellow wizards. They had white wine, and I had a Tupperware container full of fingerlings that Easy's mother had brought me. I was offering potatoes like hors d'oeuvres, and people were taking them. Hey, Tim, that's a great show, man. You're the best. Want a potato? A potato? Sure. Oh, man, I love Garfunkel and Oates. You guys just kill me, and I love the height difference. I like my two-person groups to have a height difference. Want a potato? A potato? Sure. The whole gang of charity atheist celebrities was eating potatoes. This could be the new thing. I didn't tell anyone about the diet. I was just a guy who carried potatoes around. The next day in L.A., we shot a Mazda commercial. Commercial people know how to treat talent, as we are fancifully called. My trailer was filled with all sorts of great snacks, and there was a food truck and a snack table that's called Craft Services. Great snacks everywhere. I had a bag of potatoes. I had been in my potato famine for about 10 days, and already there was trouble. My suit didn't fit right. The wardrobe people had to do some pinning and adjusting. But commercial shoots are all about tiny adjustments. They had the Mazda there, and it's a beautiful car to begin with, but man, they made it just perfect. It was waxed and buffed and perfectly lit. They'd been working on this commercial for days before our arrival. It had been months in the planning, but they were in the studio, lighting and working with P&T stand-ins for days. They had shot the commercial a zillion times already. All that was left was to bring us in to fuck it up. We were sawing the car in half. That was the gag. And I would pretend to push the car apart. It was actually done mechanically. And the instant they said cut, some guy would run in and buff the car everywhere I touched it and clean the floor everywhere I'd moved my feet. It's amazing to see people who are that good at their jobs. I had nothing to do. I just stood where they told me to stand and looked where they told me to look. Teller had to pull a lot of cloth out of his pocket, and we had to wave it around, which took several takes to get perfect. But every time I heard cut, people would run up to buff clean and offer us sips of water, in case we'd gotten parched standing there saying nothing in an air-conditioned room for 15 seconds. They learned fast, soon adding, "Pen, would you like a potato?" to the litany. It turned out I could go 15 seconds without eating. I learned something interesting during the shoot. Our TV and movie manager is my buddy Pete Golden. He's a surfer dude. The rumor about him is he went to high school with Sean Penn, and the character of Jeff Spicoli was based on him. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. He's a little younger than me, but not much, and he looks great, way better than me. Pete is slim and healthy. He saw me eating potatoes and said, "Oh, man, I love potatoes. When I'm on the road, I order a plain baked potato from room service and just have that for my dinner. I love them spuds, man." The joke we'd always had was that Pete didn't eat. We'd go to business lunches, and he would just order a salad and push it around on the plate, or maybe he'd get a cheeseburger and then take one bite. It turns out he would then go back to his room and have a potato. He also still surfs, so he gets all that cray-ray cold stuff every day in the water. He never talked about diet, but he's a potato brother. Amazing. There's a secret order of the potato. I wonder if I'm breaking some huge bond by writing about it in a book. Besides shooting the commercial, I was doing other L.A. things. And one of the things I do in L.A. is pitch. My buddy Jesse Dillon once said that every Hollywood meeting took 2 months out of his life. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I know it's true. We did a show in England called Penn and Teller Fool Us, and it sure seemed like it did really well. But it was a big, fancy, expensive Saturday night show, and it didn't do well enough, I guess. So we just did one season in the U.K. Then the U.S. bought it. Then the U.K. bought the USA version after the USA bought the U.K. version, and it did well. Showbiz. Pete, the potato eater, worked on selling it in the USA, and after a few years, the CW finally took a chance on us, and the show did really well for them. All of a sudden, we had a TV show in the U.S. again. Our last big successful show was Bullshit, and this one was FU. There's a theme in our titles. Since the CW liked me, I decided to try to sell them another crazy idea. This was a hard sell. I'm a magician, a juggler, and I guess a comedian, an author, but I'm not a TV writer. And I had an idea for a scripted one-hour, well, drama. Could FU have made them love me enough to consider letting me create and write a real show? Pete had done his part of the job, and we had a lunch meeting with the big cheeses from the CW. The big secret in showbiz is that the suits are okay. I tend to like them. It's middle management in any corporation that is all the stress and ends up sometimes seeming like assholes. But the big bosses are usually okay. I was into my second week of the potato famine, and they wanted to meet at Morton's. I was having a lunch meeting at a great steakhouse, and I was going to eat a potato. I thought about that, and it didn't seem right. The potato was supposed to pull me out of social eating, but the potato would call attention to itself. It was potatoes or nothing, so I decided on nothing. Showbiz is my job. I was working. And you know, I don't eat while I work. That's one of the things I wanted to break. I wasn't going to Morton's because I was hungry. I was going to Morton's to try to get some people to do a TV show with me. Why would I eat? I needed to be able to talk a lot and to focus, so why would I eat? We sat down and everyone ordered. I ordered a big bottle of carbonated water and a big pot of decaffeinated coffee. I told them I wasn't hungry. No one freaked out. Who cares? It was at that moment I realized that part of the reason I was a fat fuck was because I'm a greedy fuck. I haven't admitted this to anyone, but sitting here all alone at my keyboard, it's a bit easier to be honest. One of the reasons I was a fat fuck was because other people were paying. I didn't grow up poor, but I didn't grow up rich. I grew up in a family where going out to eat was kind of a big deal, and going out for steak or lobster was a very, very big deal. When I first got into show business, it was such a treat when someone would take us out for a meeting and pay for supper. It was amazing to be in a nice place and not be paying. You would think that I now have a good enough income that free food wouldn't matter much, but I'm still carny trash. I hadn't gotten rich enough to take away the lure, but I finally had gotten fat enough. I was finally too fat to take free meals. As embarrassing as it is to admit, it's true that it's a little hard for me to go to lunch on a network expense account and have only fizzy water and coffee. Yeah, that's the kind of asshole I am. Here's the punchline. It was the best pitch I've ever done. I was totally working. I was focused on my idea, watching what they understood and seeing what I needed to explain better. I was able to pay attention to their expressions and let them provide input on my idea. I wasn't worried about cutting my steak or talking while I was chewing or spitting on the suit during a passionate moment. It was my best pitch. But is the show on the air? Well, you see, I've never gotten a drama on the air. So it could be my best pitch, but still not good enough. But as I write this, they haven't said no yet. Days 10 and 11 were a different kind of potato famine test. This wasn't work. This was purely social. I was hanging with my troops in L.A. These are my real buddies. There were four of us. Richie Rich Nathanson, an L.A. writer I know from Movie Night and NYC, who's since written for Bullshit and become one of my dearest friends. Dino Cameron, now an L.A. director and writer, but you still know him as Chainsaw in Summer School. Me. And finishing up the group was my new friend of only a couple of decades, Andy Lerner, another L.A. writer who used to be a radio commercial producer. He'd booked me to do a great Nestea cool iced tea ad in which I'm bobbing for French fries in hot oil and being cooled off by cool iced tea. The ad was pulled because someone thought people would be stupid enough to try it. We were all sitting at a Buc-ee's in Burbank making jokes and complaining, and it got to be supper time for them. We were next door to Bob's Big Boy. Yeah, that Bob's Big Boy, where Drew Carey used to hang out all the time. Bob's Big Boy in Burbank is a great place for hanging and eating. Good burgers and spaghetti and real grilled cheese with the orange cheese and butter and white bread. We sat down, and the boys ordered all the above stuff. The server came over, and I asked her for a plain baked potato with nothing on it. Nothing. No oil on the outside, and no salt or pepper on it. No butter, chives, or sour cream. Nothing. Just a plain potato. Really? She asked. Yeah, really. Thanks. My buddies were shocked. What's with a potato? Why eating just a potato? They were my friends, so I owed them an explanation. Fuck you. That's why. That didn't shut them up, but who cares? They made some potato jokes, but even brilliant writers don't have a lot of potato material. So we went back to talking about all the amazing projects we all had in mind that the man was keeping us from doing. Here's the nutty part. They forgot about the potato. And more shockingly, so did I. When the food was delivered, I coveted their salty, greasy goodness. But after we all took our first bites, we just settled into eating and enjoying the company. After the first bite of anything, I don't really taste it anyway. Then it's just an activity. It's something to do with my hands while everyone is talking. I was so happy with my potato. I finished my potato and was still hungry, so I had another potato. Then I had another. We were all finished, and I felt great. I'd prepared for this big potato test, and it was so easy, it felt great. Every other time I'd left that restaurant, I'd felt like shit. I'd always eaten too much, and always felt terrible, sluggish, and a little sick. I'm not blaming Bob's. The food is prepared well, and it's fine food. It's not their fault that it took me until I was almost 60 years old to learn to feed myself properly. Day 12, 284.9. Back to Vegas. Cray Ray and I had timed this just right as my family was visiting Grandpa in the Caribbean. I had nothing to do but stay home, eat potatoes, sleep, take freezing showers, and do shows. And I even had a couple of days off from the show. It was time to be low-key and just let the metabolic winter flow over me. Well, metabolic winter did flow over me, and I got a cold. I called Cray Ray and told him I had a cold, and I was sniffing, and I felt like shit. I kind of expected him to say, well, you better have some orange juice and some chicken soup and a steak and get well and then start this again. But he didn't. He said, good. It's easier to take it easy and not eat when you have a cold. This is good. Crazy fucker. Day 13, 285.8. I don't even know what happened in that couple of days. My family was gone. I was feeling shitty and ate nothing but potatoes and slept a lot. A real lot. I met Godot at a coffee place, drink coffee, and talk about potatoes. I had a cold, but that wasn't a big deal. I get colds all the time. I do shows and scream like a nut, and I always end up exhausted, so I'm fighting a cold every 6 weeks or so. It's just stupid, and they last forever. But that cold I got during the potato famine, as of this writing, it's the last cold I've gotten, until I was overworked on Broadway 8 months later. Every 8 months is better than every 6 weeks. I yell just as much, I work just as hard, I get just as tired. I'm around young children who go to school, but two colds in 10 months. I will not claim to you that the diet stopped me from getting colds. I have no control. I have no double blind. This isn't a scientific test. But I feel a lot better, and part of feeling a lot better is not getting sick. Maybe it's tied a bit to diet. I really don't know. Day 14, 284.0. Wow. Wow. I'd lost about 20 pounds in 14 days, but that wasn't the big news. As the weight dropped off me, Cray Ray started laying the real info on me. Fat wasn't the problem. Fat was a symptom. I didn't start this diet because I wanted to be in the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. I started because I wanted to get off the blood pressure drugs. The weight loss, the fat loss, was not the goal. It was a side effect. This day really showed why I needed to have a doctor involved. Every day I took my blood pressure and pulse with my Withings blood pressure cuff, and that groovy little thing sent the info to both Cray Ray and my doctor. We'll never know whether it was the weight loss, the lack of salt and other shit in my diet, or the magic healing power of potatoes, but my blood pressure was going down. My pulse and BP were not just going down on me a little, they were going down faster than me on my high school girlfriend. On day 14, my pulse hit 38. That's some dangerous shit. When they talk about rapid weight loss being dangerous, this is what they mean. The very drugs that kept me alive when I was living on salt and fat could now kill me. At around this time, my blood pressure hit 132 over 64. That's not too low. It's still a little above normal. But for me, to be on the high side of the normal range was astonishing. My doctor was talking to other doctors as well as to Cray Ray, and they pulled me off one BP medication. And after a little more discussion, they pulled me off another. I stopped taking two blood pressure drugs that I've been taking every day for years. This is stuff that can't be done alone. Even my doctor couldn't do it alone. He's a great doctor. He needed advice and pulse checks and BP readouts all the time. It was like an emergency now to get me off the things that used to be keeping me alive. After just 2 weeks, I was off two meds. It seemed possible this Cray Ray shit was working. 2 weeks had flown by, and now I was the potato guy. A friend of mine from a 90s punk band came backstage with his son after our show to hang out. I was very comfortable holding court, making jokes, and eating my baked potato. It felt so natural, even in front of a punk dad. Except for the continuing lightheadedness during the show, I felt I could have kept up the potato famine forever. But Cray Ray had other plans. It was time for Godot and me to have corn on the cob. Godot and I would have corn! If you don't think that's a big fucking hairy deal, you have not understood a word of this book.